On this week's show, Educating the Trades of the Future with Jim Jones from Colorado Mountain College. In this week's news, a special episode diving into the news with the Construction Dorks.
Construction is the world's oldest industry but spends the least amount of money on innovation. When we realized people outside the construction industry didn't typically associate construction with technology like virtual reality, apps, and robotics, we started the ConTech Crew. Each week, we bring our listeners the latest in ConTech news and interview the minds behind the technological innovations changing the way we build. So strap in, enjoy the ride, and geek out. It's ConTech Crew time.
I am back. I got my boy Jim Jones here. I'm excited. This is a special episode for me. So, Jim, say hello to everybody. Let them know what you do today, and we'll kind of dive in.
Hey, everybody. How goes it? Name is Jim Jones. I am the program director for Skilled Crafts and Trades for Colorado Mountain College. We're located in the Central Rockies of Colorado, and CMC has 11 campuses stretched from Steamboat down to Salida, and I get to develop, create, craft, and build trade programs for concurrent enrollment and adult learners, and then manage those programs as they pop up.
So we're going to dive into that because I know everybody listening, we talk about the skilled trades gap. We talk about alternative education paths. This is all of it coming together, but this is a little bit of a special one for me because I met Jim 27 years ago as a lift operator for Vail Resorts. And Jim, tell everybody what you were doing back then.
27 years ago? It's kind of hard to remember, Sample. skiing a ton. That was life. I mean, years ago, I came out and I came to CMC and I got received an associate's degree in ski area operations and management. And started working for Vail Resorts back in 92 and started out running snowcats. Loved it. It's probably one of the best jobs I've ever had. And then met Jeff as a lift mechanic because back then I was starting to go full time with the resort, just wrenching away in the chairlifts in the summer and grooming in the winter, and then went full time lift maintenance after a few years of that.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's funny. You remember certain people when you start, and I remember running a lift with Jim and his first safety talk to me, we sat down and he said, listen, man, I picked you. They, by the way, back then they handpicked the people who would run the lifts for them. So, because as Jim put it, you know, my life is now in your hands. If you move this thing when you're not supposed to, my hand can go with it. So I remember that first ever safety talk where I was like, this kick-ass ski guy, chill, just got real, like, hey. Right. And but possibly the easiest job on the planet because for me, because I sat in a lift house, hung out, waited for you to make a couple calls, move you from a tower to a tower, go back to sitting and have my lunch. Y'all were up in the air doing the hard stuff. So
yeah, those were good days, man. I really enjoyed climbing towers, being on the mountain, working at, you know, 10,000 feet plus, and calling it in, making sure you'd stop just in time, right at the right spot so we could pick the rope, service the lift, go tower to tower to tower. Like, I loved it, man. That was awesome.
Yeah, that's right. I kind of forgot about that. But yeah, we had to like communicate on the radio to stop you guys right where you needed to stop so you could reach the things that you needed because you were riding up in something that had the arm of a chairlift, but it was really a people lift, right? You guys were in that thing.
Yeah. I mean, essentially you're just in this man basket and you have all your equipment, you know, you're all strapped in, all locked in, and you're essentially like in this human basket and you're just going from tower to tower to tower and you got to call it in as you start approaching the tower because, of course, you can't see it.
Yep.
So we'd call, you know, 20 feet, 15 feet, 10 feet, 5 feet, 2 feet, stop. And, you know, I mean, it takes a little bit of finesse calling stop, you know, a few feet before you actually hit the stop and then when the machine tends to stop and then rope slack. And so, yeah. Yeah. Those are good times.
Those were some good times. And it's really awesome because Jim and I have stayed in touch over the years, gone through different phases of our careers. But we've always had one major thing in common besides skiing is that this is my mountain biking buddy. So when y'all hear me talk on the show about hours and hours in the Hurt Locker, you are now looking and listening to the man that puts me in the Hurt Locker on a regular basis.
Come on, Sample. Like, it's always just fun because it just doesn't matter, you know, like what I say. You're always like, okay. And you never complain. You never get too frustrated, you know, and it's like, where are we going? It's like, I don't know. It's just up over here around the corner a little bit.
Yeah,
little bits, another half hour, 45 minutes. That will be good. What could go wrong?
Yeah, we could go wrong. Let's do this at sunset and try to watch the sun or sunrise. Yeah. And let's try to watch the sun come up. Why can I not feel my feet?
Oh God, that was a cold one. I know exactly which one you're talking about. Yeah. That was cold, especially coming down within 20, 30 miles an hour in that valley. Whoa.
Yeah, that was chilly.
You know, we've had some real adventures, you know. I can think of several to where we're climbing, you know, 5,000 vert, 30 miles, up around 8,000 to 10,000 feet, riding around. Like, that's mountain biking right there.
It is. It is. Yeah. But on those long roads, we've had a long time to talk. And it's kind of cool to watch our careers kind of reconverge after they pretty much started together. Because when you were going full time for the ski resort in maintenance and lifts, I was going full time in IT. Mm-hmm. And so our paths continued to cross. But now tell everybody a little bit about sort of the next steps in your career path that brought you to this director of skilled trades, crafts and trades here.
Wow. It's been a crazy ride. And to be honest, you know, sometimes I pinch myself. It's like, wow, like what am I doing in academia? You know, school never came easy for me. It was always hard, always a challenge, but I could always just seemingly fix anything. I just have this mechanical aptitude that's always kind of, you know, propelled me through life. God, after leaving Vail Resorts, I jumped into local government as a fleet mechanic. And at the time it was, you know, we're in the mountain regions here and it was decent pay and benefits were spectacular. The department was solid. The people were solid. Boss, fantastic. So I just gravitated to it and loved it. It was a great way to start a family up in the mountains and kind of set some real solid roots in the Vail Valley. And then after about 10 years of that, I partnered with another individual and we started our own automotive shop. That is still running today. I, after about 7 years, sold my half and kind of got out. And then kind of out of nowhere, I was literally picking dandelions with a number four blade in my front yard. And I had a conversation with a young lady up the way from my neighborhood. And lo and behold, she turns out she's the Dean of Academic Affairs for Colorado Mountain College. And she was asking me, she knew of my son, you know, of me. And we just had a brief conversation. And essentially, I kind of helped consult on the development, or I should say the redevelopment of an automotive program for one of the local high schools in the valley. At that time, she kind of got it developed, put it together, and I applied for the position. I received the position. And then I spent, you know, another 7 years in there to where I actually developed, sourced the equipment, transplanted the program. A few years later, I built a sister program in a different town. And next thing you know, 7 years later, I think they just kind of realized like, wow, this guy can actually get her done. And so now they kind of advanced my position to program director of trades.
We're going to jump into what that is, Jim, but I want to take a quick step back because to me, there's a cool theme here with, you know, going through not loving school, not having it coming easy. And when he says he can fix anything, it's probably one of the, other reasons I'm always riding my bikes with him, because I break bikes and can't fix them. And this man can fix a bike. He can fix anything that rolls, in my opinion, or climbs over things. So, but you went to then, you know, another large, I would call a local government sort of corporate. It's not really full corporate, but then you went independent and learned what it took to build a shop and to create a flow and to really be efficient, right? Because you're there to make money. So there was efficiencies. And that's what I saw when you brought it to the program, right? I think that's one of the interesting parts of academia is you don't always see somebody who has the reality of building, the reality of building a business, what it looks like. And I think you bring that unique view to it. So talk a little bit about how, you know, as you were crafting that first automotive, how your experience in, you know, building a business helped you design it. What was different about, you know, re-architecting it for you?
Production, production, production. I had the opportunity to redesign, first basically resurrect that first shop that was actually located down at Eagle Valley High School. And we had, we had six stalls, but there was only four lifts. And so, you know, the layout was kind of poor, whatever, you know, it was just a great opportunity. And I was kind of enjoying it, teaching, you know, my craft to the next generation, if you will. And then on the redesign of that shop, we moved into a different location and it turned into be like a linear five bay facility with an upper classroom. And so every bay was inclusive and didn't impact the others. So essentially, like, I'm thinking like, okay, if this was my company, I'd want tools here, you know, monitors here. We want the flow to go this way. We want the students to move this way for basically production and ease of operation. We put 110, 220 in air front and back of every bay because, you know, like for all of you who have been working in a shop, even one extension cord run across the floor, well, that just sucks. So we made sure that, you know, the cordage was minimal, air hose was minimal. So you got your roll carts, roll equipment, AC machines, charger systems, whatever it may be, through the shop efficiently. Because at the end of the day, like Sample, you've been in there, man. Like we had almost 20 individuals walking around this five bay facility. And it can get cluttered and it can get hectic. And so the organization piece of it all is it's constant. So I really wanted the flow. I wanted efficiency and I wanted kind of inclusive and condensed bays to where just say we have a vehicle from a student, maybe he's doing a motor job, maybe she's doing a set of brakes or he's doing suspension. We don't get the right components, parts don't show up right. There's always hurdles. That one project would not impact any others. That was the big goal.
I know to my listeners listening, you're nailing on a couple of things we really want and don't get out of a lot of students that hit our world is this idea of what it's going to look like in reality, because a lot of times their shops, their things are built the way they're built for a reason, right? I mean, money can be a problem, not having somebody who's thinking that way, et cetera. So, you know, thinking about production, 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 because when we're building our, you know, offsite fabrication facilities, those are the kinds of minds and things we want because of exactly that thing. A part sometimes just doesn't show up and work cannot stop. Things cannot stop. So,
no.
And so I'm loving that you brought that there. I really wanted to highlight that before we, you know, kind of moved on to this has evolved now. You've stepped into a new role that, that entails a lot more than this. And first, talk about, you know, how that came about and sort of what the college is thinking with really taking on a big bite. Some of this existed before and some of it is kind of new to what you've brought. So talked a little bit about what the whole thing is now, and then we'll roll into where we think it can go.
Maybe 2 years ago, there was only a handful of programs that were essentially trades related. With CMC, you know, we have a phenomenal welding instructor, Jason Shoup, down in Rifle, And we had the welding program also in Leadville by Jeff Lautzenheiser. And then, of course, my auto program that I was when I was the instructor located in Gypsum, which is run out of the Edwards campus. And, you know, of course, we had the Skeary Operations program up in Leadville. That's always been a staple for the college. But that was, you know, essentially it. And then a few years back, it was actually, you know, through a connection you gave me, Jeff. But now Lauren Thompson with Milwaukee, man, she stepped up and really helped us out. We ended up purchasing, I want to say it was like around 180 grand in Cordis equipment from Milwaukee. And, you know, we, of course, buying in bulk, being productive with it and so forth. But we were able to implement 5 carpentry programs in one summer through CMC. And so we are now offering national credentials through the NCCER. We have 5 active programs operating. It's like one Steamboat, Rifle, Edwards, Leadville, and Salida. And then grew another auto program down in Salida. And then we popped up my second one that I helped consult build. Was in Rifle. And so now we have 3 auto programs, 5 carpentry. We have a chairlift maintenance program, which I could talk to you about in a bit. And we have the Skeary Operations program. And even with auto, like now I think we're broadcasting to about 225 auto students across the Central Rockies. And man, I'm hoping I can pop up one more in the town of Glenwood with the Roaring Fork School District. So progression is constant right now, and it's so exciting to be a part of, because I think academia is starting to trend back towards the trades, and CMC has proven it, and it's starting to show.
We talk about it on the show quite a bit. It is a misunderstood career path. And for all the reasons that we could talk about, but we've talked about them on the show ad nauseum. It's awesome. That's why I wanted to bring you on, is that I can't believe we've been, you know, paralleling life for so long, riding bikes and talking about this stuff for so long. And now seeing this alternative path come out of someone, you know, to champion it, right? It takes the school, and we're extraordinarily grateful for CMC for doing what they do, and NCCER and Milwaukee for leaning in. And by the way, we need more to lean in. So if you're listening and you want to lean in, because look how fast this is growing with, you know, I know it's $180,000-$200,000 in Milwaukee stuff, right? That's right. A drop in the bucket when you talk about the gap in skilled trades that we have and the number of kids that need this path, right? It doesn't mean either. You can go through this, get your 2-year degree, have a skill, and it could mean the next time you go to school is for something else that you have a foundational need for, want for. It's super great to see. And I mean, it's got to be rewarding for you, since you are so passionate about your craft, to see all these kids find a new path moving forward and to connect with it.
You're talking about life skills. Like, just on what you're just stating there, like I wanted to touch on the fact that CMC now on the catalog, fall of 24, we have a new Associates in Applied Science degree in multi-occupational trades. So what that means is now all these students who are going through these welding programs and auto and carpentry all throughout the state, right, through CMC, all those credits now apply to this larger degree. There's a bigger picture here now. And so, you know, for instance, in Edwards, we're seeing, you know, students graduating high school with about 37 to 40 college credits just in automotive. You know, you've seen it. They show up sophomore, they end up staying for 3 years because the topics change. It kind of follows the ASC schedule. And so now we're implementing carpentry in Eagle Valley. This summer, I got another one I need to build. And so this summer building carp down there, and we're trying to locate equipment and tools. We're going to run its CR material again and run that curriculum. But what's exciting is, example, like we are actually a step away from having high school students walk with an associate's in applied sciences and trades at time of high school graduation. And so we all, like all in the trades, we all know like the degree doesn't make the man, right? But by having this degree, it kind of front loads your life. And so when that mid to upper level management position shows up, say in whatever, 10 years, as you've been working in the field for a company, now all of a sudden you're able to apply for that position just because you have that credential. And so it's super exciting to see the possibility of these students walking with that associate's degree at graduation. And that's all within CMC. You know, so it's 45 credits of trades related programs. It could be, I mean, we have HVAC, we have auto and welding and carp, and then the chairlift maintenance applies to it, avalanche science, ski operations. So like the possibility is there. It's so exciting to watch it all grow and come together. It's pretty cool, man.
It's really cool. And I've had a blast riding along with you and talking about what these kids are doing and talking about what you're building and what you're passionate about. And so I know though that this isn't where you want it to end. I know that you've got more in store, especially because this is what's been cool, you know, hours of suffering while talking about where we see the world going is, you know, where do you see the world going? What else do you think you can add as CMC and just as someone who cares about where this world's headed?
CMC is hyper-focused on providing what the community is asking for. With 11 different campuses, we essentially listen to our community consistently. And when they ask for this type of education, it's our job to provide that. For instance, currently right now, we are looking at developing chairlift maintenance level 2. We created and built a lift maintenance level 1 program in partnership with Altera Mountain Company, right? About a year or so ago. And I've been in the process of developing level 2. And this one has been, level 2 has been developed specifically by CMC, myself, Mike Lane from the NSAA. He's worked tirelessly on his lift maintenance resource guide. Altera, Hannah, Vail Resorts has contributed. It's been a crazy ride to put this one together. But we are looking at running a summer intensive out of the Leadville campus this spring for level 1, which is 12 credits. And then level 2 is going to be right behind it, which is 24 credits. But it's going to take the better part of a year. Because if you've ever been a lift mechanic or been around a lift mechanic, the amount of knowledge is incredible that they have to retain. You know, they have all their lives in their hands. So, you know, that program has been exciting to build. I see more programs popping up. You know, I just got out of a conference in Florida with the NEVC, and we're looking at attaching kind of like, I'm going to come in a little light, but I think we're going to build a couple courses to add on to our automotive programs to where we're teaching EV in the summers. And so really drivetrains, batteries, and charging, we'll probably start with just 2 courses there and kind of attach them to the current existing auto programs, because just need, you know, some curriculum, which we're working with CDX on that. And then, man, we're looking at starting EV charging station installation program. there's a big call for that. So I just see these programs popping up just left and right. It just kind of depends upon facilities, you know, and if I can get the instructor line item through the college. So that's, you know, I can find the individuals. They're there. It's just a matter of whether you can get the line item for the individual, with the college, and then the location. Those are some of the big hurdles that we have, but like sky's the limit, man. Right now, trade centers, there's grants out there. It's just a lot.
Whenever you're talking about something as substantial as suicide awareness and as alarming as to statistics around construction being the second highest rates of suicide in industry, we'd be fooling ourselves if we thought that this was a one-player fix, meaning that it just takes one silver bullet or one easy button to solve this challenge. This is a multi-threaded challenge, if you will, and it's really something that is the responsibility of all of us to lean in, to raise awareness, to provide tools and resources, to up-level conversations we have around, you know, I mean, in construction, we're pretty much, hey, what's my job require me to get it done at any cost? Well, we now see what the outcome of that is. So I think it's important that we partner together to really have a unified voice around why mental health awareness is important, why it matters, and how we can frankly do better as an industry. It takes each of us leaning in to really create that.
It's awesome. I mean, it's so cool to see. And that, I think this is what's different about community college, especially Colorado Mountain College, having been here for so long, is it is driven by the community. It is driven by the need. Mm-hmm. There's very few groups that can be this close to the impact and have their decisions make a difference. And, you know, I'm out on the big stage all the time talking to people, and everything you hit, the number of people and the knowledge gap that we have in EV and automotive, they're, you know, it's not your, mm-hmm. it's not the same as the cars that have always been going through. So everybody needs training. And as that fleet grows in our world, so does the need for people to work on it. EV charging stations has been just a huge push. I mean, I saw an article by Clay Starr the other day that said, getting EV charging in the electrical desert, like these areas of the country that are still just barren to EV charging. And that limits the growth. And I know you talked about this, but I think there's some need or want to start to add electrical, you know, some of maybe the other, you mentioned plumbing, you know, I think there's needs for those. And it really is a matter of funding, partnership. So that was the opportunity. That's why I wanted to bring you on, is to, so that our listeners, as much as we lament that there are people out there trying, and they need to be connected with the people who have the need, right? If you're a builder, you need people. If you're an automotive shop, you need people. There's an endless need for skilled trades in the future. So it's super powerful to see what you're building and why you're building it and how CMC is accomplishing it. It's awesome.
It's been successful, man. Like it's just seemingly working. Yeah, of course we need help and we need assistance because we can't do it all. You know, like for instance, when we partnered with Milwaukee, man, like they stepped up between the resources and the locations and just absolutely hitting it right. You know, bang, one summer, there's five programs, boom. And we're talking carpentry. We're not just building birdhouses and cutting boards for grandma. Like, we started five carpentry programs in five different locations across the state. And like to the number of students, we're probably talking 60 a day per location.
There you go.
Right. National credentials, NCCR curriculum, modern current technology, you know, battery technology. Like it was awesome. Then, you know, then I'm sitting around, I was probably with you, we're probably on a ride, sweating it out. And I'm just like thinking to myself as I'm trying to distract myself from the next hill, you know, like, I'm like, yeah, okay, I got locations and I got equipment and we got curriculums. Like, damn, I need material. Got to build, like, we need something to build with, right? Mm-hmm. Well, Alpine Lumber, there they are. They have locations all over the state. They've always contributed to the community. They've always cared. Well, lo and behold, they got a location in Steamboat, Summit, BV, Eagle. Like, they're littered everywhere, right where we're teaching carpentry. So it just makes total sense. So we're connecting the CMC Foundation, Alpine Lumber, carpentry programs. And now the latest talk right now is I'm working with sustainability and they want to start partnering with the trades in some form or fashion so we can start partnering there. Like, who knows where this is going to go? It's just so exciting to be a part of right now.
Well, I mean, yeah, again, you're drawing together at the local level the things we talk on the national level all the time about ESG and our sustainability and decarbonization and waste. I mean, it would be great I'm just spitballing this. At some point, though, come in and show, you know, just how hard and just how bad the waste in construction is. So, you know, it's, you know, one in every four homes, basically, we throw in a landfill. Is where we are today. And that's for the highest end builders. That's for the builders who focused on waste reduction, et cetera. And we can't keep doing that. So to see sustainability, connect with the trades early in education, then you're sending students out into the world that have not only are cognizant of it, but have a set of skills that they've been taught. And this is also the place where one of these students, in my opinion, is probably the one who's going to come up with, he or she will come up with the next way to do things more efficient, more effective, because they don't think like we do, right? We've done things our way forever. They're just learning. So they're learning the craft, but also can then, you know, give us innovation, give us change. Are you a construction company that's inundated with applications? Are you struggling to get technology adoption? Are you worried you're creating data silos? We refer to that as gray work. You want to learn more about gray work and how leading construction companies are getting past it? Then join me at QuickBase's Empower 2024. Go to quickbase.com/empower.
Right. So. Yeah, you know, and in the short term, what we've really, you know, tried to promote, and we have been working with Balance Point construction a little bit, to where we're actually trying to get these waste materials, right, that are just kind of chilling around the job site, whether they get some scrap wood, might be a bowed, twisted, cupped, you know, board, and might even be crowned, whatever, just too much. Just one of those 2x4s, right? 1 8-foot stick is gold to an instructor in the classroom to start teaching the never evers how to use a chop saw, how to use this miter saw. Take one of those boards, fillet that thing like it's your job, and let all your students start running the saws, running the equipment, and getting that fear out of the way on something that's absolute trash to a contractor. Like, we'll take everything we get. You know,
one person's trash is another person's treasure,
that's
baby.
That's right, man. And so, you know, we're actively reaching out to the community. We're talking to contractors for the carpentry, and then, you know, of course, for the welding and so forth. And with automotive, we're putting students in place. It's super exciting time in the mountain region of Colorado right now with CMC driving the trades.
Well, it is awesome. So the last thing, since we are a technology show, and I hope my technology people have passed along or have stayed along, because we need people in the end. Our technology in the background does no good if there are not women and men in the field putting work in place that have these skills. Because, yeah, someday robots will do a lot more than what they do today. But for now, we need people, and we're always going to need people, and we're always going to need really skilled trades. But talk about technology needs. Like, it's an awesome opportunity for, I think, just like Milwaukee, for others to lean in and bring technology to our students. I know in your career, you've seen the diagnostics and things change over the years. So talk about the opportunity for technology providers and people to get involved to teach this next round of students.
In the short term, what I see being a reality for CMC is, you know, I know, Jeff, we've had some conversations about, you know, 3D mapping of internal space. So you can take material takeoff, linear footage numbers, and so forth. I see that really being the glue between skilled crafts and trades and sustainability. I would love to view some software, see how it would roll out, the practicality to where the student could understand it, and how would I roll that into my curriculum? Like, I think it'd be pretty exciting to take this technology to where we could just absolutely laser out the internal of, say, you know, a basement. And then we could implement, okay, we need this much material for 2x4. We need this much for 2x6, this many TJs and so forth. I think that would be a reality for us to take the step forward into technology for skilled crafts and trades and sustainability. And that's kind of where I think I'm pushing this next move.
I like it. Well, if you're listening out there and that's your space, which, you know, that is what this platform provides me is some ears. If that's your space, or you know whose space that is, you make sure they hear this episode and connect with us and connect with Jim. The cool part is, for my technology folks, I'm going to lean in here. I'm right here with Jim. I ride my bike with him every other week when I'm not on the road. So there is an opportunity too for me to have an impact, for me to be some glue. It's why, you know, when you got to this point, it was time to bring you on the show. So with that, tell people how they can connect with you, where they can find out more about, you know, these programs that are going on in Colorado Mountain College. And this is not just for people in our state, right? Other people, this is an opportunity for them to come in, live somewhere mm-hmm. beautiful, you know, at 18 years old and learn some great things and leave with a degree fast and a place to work in a beautiful place.
Y'all know Sample. So he can always get a hold of me. We're always in communication. We almost talk weekly, it seems. Summertime, even more so when we're out riding. But other than that, you can always contact me through email. And that would be jjjones@coloradomtn.edu. So with the email, I'm always on, I'm always accessible. But of course, through Sample, anyone can always contact me because we seemingly talk all the time.
Well, now you guys know, I you know, this was another episode I held on to for a little while because now you know where a lot of my knowledge of the real deal of what happens in the world comes from and the connection to it. And I was really excited, Jim. Thank you for sitting down today to talk to us.
Yep. Happy to do so. Love the invite and looking forward to trying to get you on the Nordic skates.
I knew he'd have to throw that in. trying to get me out on the Nordic skates. Oh. One more round of gear. And with that, stay tuned for a special construction technology news of the week with the Construction Dorks. Back in 2020, I heard about a new software platform called Join. Within minutes of seeing Join, I knew it had the power to revolutionize collaborative project delivery. In fact, I was so sold on Join that I joined the team as its industry evangelist. Many trade shows and podcasts later, Join is now used by 50% of the ENR top 30. Why? Pre-con and ops leaders at DPR, Bolt, McCarthy, Barton Mallow, Clark, and others say that they like Join because it does two big things: collaborative, trackable decision-making, and awesomely simple visuals. Want to learn more about the power of Join? Go to www.join.build/demo to learn about how better gets built. And now for a special news episode with the Construction Dorks. That's right. I'm sitting down with Jonathan Marsh and Travis Voss to record our own version of the news this week. A little, simulcast, so to speak, since there will have been a Construction Dorks episode out on AI with just the four of us rapping. And I thought, what a better way to sit down and have a little news about it and get a discussion out on the Contech crew. So what do you have for us this morning, Jonathan? What article did you bring?
How AI that drives ChatGPT will move into the physical world. And we had talked about this. And we had also talked about how language models aren't the type of AI that we think of when we think of AI. And here's a company, Covariant, that's looking at, okay, well, if we know that these large language models understand text best, how do we reposition the way that the sensors work, the way that the inputs work on a robot so that it can drive it with text rather than have to use some of this more advanced technology with images and with capture. So I really like the idea. And what they're doing is they're going into a warehouse, which they've identified as a safe area. And we didn't talk about this last time, but a big part of the thought behind deploying robots in construction is, hey, there's a safety issue there. But if you're in a warehouse, this is a relatively safe place. Like, your cost of error is not very much in a warehouse. They drop a box.
Right.
It's not a big deal. On a job site, pretty big deal. But they're basically, you know, they're doing some intermediary translation. So like, if something is in an image, they're referring it back to text and then driving it into the model. They've also made it so that these robots, because it's leveraging ChatGPT, can just have a conversation, you know, so you can give it basic directions in English. You can understand conversation. They're all moving towards that. Let's see if we can have that best style of interaction. So I thought it was a really good sort of tie into what we had talked about with, you know, looking at where we expect AI to make the biggest change. Cause right now, like, robots, primarily you program them to do something very specific. They do that specific thing. And this kind of opens it up to being, you know, very, very context oriented, where you can have it doing multiple different things. You can have it in sort of a less discrete or less consistent environment. But you got a chance to read it, right, Travis? What did you think, or a chance to look at it at least?
Yeah, I was just looking at it and I kind of was listening to you and lost my thoughts, but it was something did kind of tap on in my head, and we'll probably reference it a little again when we do mine. But this concept that they're taking the sensors and they're taking the video images and then have to convert it to text, right, to help the robot along. And that I don't have anything else other to say than that. That's really kind of fascinating, kind of interesting, because a lot of us are thinking about AI and robotics, and we try to anthropomorphize them, right? We try to turn them into people. But that one statement really, you know, hit home, because they're not people. We have to take whatever happening in reality and convert it into something that the machine can use, right? What about you, Jeff?
Yeah, it's amazing the abilities that they have right now with this to turn things like pictures and other things into text and then train these things to learn. And, you know, I think the idea is, and if you've looked at, you know, Amazon, et cetera, they're automating the way they do as much as they can. But some of this allows, you know, free flowing. It's not full. It doesn't have to be automated. It can react to the situation. It can adjust on the fly. And we just don't see that out of a lot of other, you know, single line things, a robot that does X or,
right,
and a large language model that does Y. To have the two kind of melding together, man, that's the future. I can see this, you know, Spot the Dog is a very expensive go fetch, but this might be a much more effective, efficient, and cost-effective go fetch. And, you know, again, if a skilled laborer or somebody can have a robot friend in a fab shop, I mean, that's the perfect environment for something like this to happen, especially because we know we want everything organized perfectly in our fab shops, but sometimes that's not the reality. So this thing can adapt, because again, the other ones, they cannot adapt, they cannot understand, they can't do anything. So it's, to me, I'm just fascinated, Jonathan, by this one.
Yeah, and I think for me, the takeaway, we talked a little bit in construction about like a kind environment where everything's very, very easy and very predictable, and then this wicked environment at the job site. This is the first time we're seeing a robot that's focused on that wicked environment.
Awesome. So Travis, what did you bring today? You went a little off here. I like this one.
Yeah, I went a little off. I didn't bring an actual article, but, you know, as a as a podcaster and a podcast nerd, I do listen to a fair amount. And and not to promote one podcast and another, we're appearing on a third, but I forget which day it came out. It was early last week or end of last week. Lex Friedman, who, if you don't know, is a MIT roboticist and kind of a famous nerd, had on Jan Lucan, who's Meta, a small little company that maybe you've heard of. He is their chief AI scientist and working on their AI push. What's it called? Llama, I believe, is theirs. And it was really fascinating because he gets into, I think it's roughly a 2-hour conversation, closer to 3-hour conversation, but it was interesting to see somebody at that level, working with that much data. We kind of alluded it, you know, we've talked to or alluded it before about all the data that a company like Facebook was having. We talked about it in the darts last night, but, kind of getting his understanding in from his position, you know, and again, this is something we brought up on the Dorks was, it's not going to be the greatest thing ever. It's not going to be the worst thing ever. Like it's going to end up somewhere in the middle. And, you know, he went through kind of everything, like the reasons to open source it, the reasons that, some of the reasons that doom and gloom, from a global scale probably isn't going to end up being the reality is because, you know, you have large, businesses, you have government entities focusing on this. So they're always going to be trying to level set each other and kind of bring it back down to, you know, AI is not going to take over the world. There's not going to be any sentient beings or Skynet or, you know, certain bad government actors aren't going to, you know, they are going to try, right? They are going to try to inject themselves. You know, we talked about the election cycles that, you know, 40% of the world is going through right now. There is going to be some sort of bad action and push in there. But the good side, to your point from the Dorks, Jeff, is the white hat guys are doing the same thing, right? Yeah. So kind of that conversation about leveling that out and just from a general knowledge, having somebody at that level kind of really break down the tokenization, the way that they're teaching these LLMs, why it struggles with video and audio, even though, again, it is getting better. But he really gets into why it's not perfect and probably will never be perfect. And then another interesting part of the discussion was he basically said the Turing test is bogus. These things are already breaking it, but it doesn't mean that they're sentient and that, you know, he just means that the test is flawed, right? These current AIs, they can't reason. They don't have strategy. They don't pre-plan. They don't perceive the natural world. Even to your article, Jonathan, they can sense stuff, but then they have, you know, it's not a human perception, right? A perceive and react. So, what are your thoughts, John?
I think that every time I listen to Lex and the people on his show, they're outside of the hype cycle in a real way. They're outside of the hype cycle. So unless they're selling something, and they occasionally do, but unless they're selling something, they're actually very calm about this. And it isn't as big a mystery as it's made out to be for good marketing. So I do like that they're out there and kind of saying, no, relax. This is how it works. This is how it learns. And once you learn that, I feel like it's one of those things, the closer you get to understanding it, the less dangerous it looks and the less sentient. Right. I was actually working with Alec. He's one of my programmers. And I'm like, oh, well, just have it do this math. And he goes, oh, well, they don't really do math. They actually reach outside for a separate, he said, John, imagine they reach outside for a plugin to do math, because math isn't really text, or they translate it into some weird text and then do it. So even their computation, while it seems to flow through one interface, they're touching on a lot of things in order to do that. And there really is some major, major limitations. So I'll definitely listen to that podcast. I didn't listen to that one. I do listen to them from time to time. I think the biggest thing for me is listening to things like that. If you are believing the hype, go listen to some of these people that are deep in it. They will help you. They are already gurus at this. They already understand how it's going to work, and are really good at explaining it. Jeff,
right, you want to listen to I'm sorry. You want to listen to those people that are at that level, right? Not the salesperson that's pushing why you should use their AI plugin, but you want to listen to somebody that's like, I've been building these things for 30 years. This is how it's really going to go.
Yeah, they have a much better kind of grounding in reality. Just for our listeners, because, you know, this isn't the Doorcast. This is the crew. The Turing test, originally called the Imitation Game by Alan Turing in 1950, is a test of a machine's ability to exhibit intelligent behavior equivalent to or indistinguishable from that of a human. The interesting thing that Travis brought up that Lex talks about on this one that I think is cool is that actually in 1950, Alan Turing could not have known the power of what LLMs and others can do. Mm-hmm. And so it appears as though these LLMs are, and AI is passing the Turing test. But Lex is saying, and the professor is saying, or the chief strategist at Meta is saying, the test is flawed. And actually, we're going to have to change what that means to really decide whether something is sentient. And if you've, you know, interacted with AI, it can feel as though it is acting like a human, but it is just consuming masses amounts of text and understanding from the internet. So I love it. I can't wait to see it.
It's a predictive tool, right? We talked about this on the Dorks. It's trying to predict what the next word in the series is. And I suppose there's some great philosophical debate that says, well, if it's predicting what I want to hear next, maybe it is sentient in telling me what I want to hear. But that's not really the point of sentience in AI, right? It's just trying to find what the next logical word is in the sentence, and that's not true. In my philosophical opinion, that's not true sentience.
Like, yeah, it's
no right.
It's very good at predicting because we're predictable because we follow patterns. If you listen to any of us talk, you'll hear us use the same words quite a bit. So, mm-hmm. I love it. I've got two today, and I think you guys are going to like this first one. I found this first one from my friends over at Tech Brew. Love that that mailer. If you guys don't get that email newsletter, you should check it out. It's really cool. This is venhub.com. So this is the future of retail, fully autonomous, AI-driven smart stores, revolutionizing the shopping experience. This is super cool. These, I'm going to call them, for lack of a better term, guys, these giant vending machines with big robot arms. But also they can be trucked in and popped up, and they are, you know, highly secure. They have cameras, they have bulletproof glass, they have all these capabilities to pop up a convenience store. And if you think about it, 24-hour convenience store, you want the 24-hour, but that means somebody's got to sit behind the counter. And that's probably why they're not open at those times. And so it's a fantastic piece to go through cities. These, I think the founders have a background from Amazon. So they're also thinking about other things you can do with it. In this, it's just a convenience store. But can you imagine, you know, medicine? Can you imagine other, you know, necessaries to pop up places to be? The bar. Oh, Jonathan's immediate. This is the dorks on the curb.
This is the best mobile bartender for any outdoor event. Is roll up here. We got the, and we've seen them do this with like bartenders where they use the articulated arms to do it. Like, and what they've got it set up with the truck interface and everything else. I'm not even kidding. I would imagine you will see this at some concerts, some shows,
festivals,
a mobile bar, and it just makes it's easier, faster. They can run four or five arms behind there. You know, I mean, it's really cool. I think that when you look at this, go look at the animation on this, and it just makes it so easy to understand how this is going to work. You know, it's very, very, very sticky idea.
Yeah. And I was just thinking, like, think about a job site, right? Think about loading it up with all the, you know, if you're doing rough in and you've got all the things you need, the lights, whatever, and you got to deliver it there. You can't just store all the materials. Material storage is a pain in the butt. This thing can come in, pop up, get what you need, do what you need, and it can start to learn and predict what it's going to run out of and what you're going to need more of. And, yeah. you know, and then in the reverse on a job site, it could start to understand from how many, you know, of these, you know, face plates are gone, how far we are on face plates or how much of this copper's gone. So how far are we on that? Or at least how far should we be on that? So Travis, I'm interested, man.
I think this is a really cool play. You know, again, we thump this drum all the time of the workforce shortage, and it's in pretty much every industry, whether that's because of people leaving the workforce or, you know, let's face it, as we evolve as a society, a lot of these, you know, these low reward type jobs, people are just not interested in. And there's a big discussion around there of, you know, about, like, young people in the workplace and that kind of thing. We need to have, so there still needs to be, you know, maybe the person stocking this is still your entry level position, but this does free up a portion of your workforce to do more high value added tasks, right? I was also thinking like your tool room, you know, that kind of thing. Like you really need to have a person sit there manning that when you could, you know, they've already have, you know, Fastenal and some of the other ones have the vending machines. Like, what if you just had a tool room with a robot in it that you punched in your job number and you say, I need XYZ, I need a rotary saw and four pairs of gloves.
You know, and they could do vendor managed inventory off location too. Like say you have five contractors in an area that all want vendor managed inventory off of someone, you know, they can have a drive up for this where you just drive up and it loads you up. Or, I mean, I think that the vending machines are probably cheaper for putting in your shop than this is going to be. But I think if you could combine a couple jobs, or if you had like a vendor managed inventory on something that the entire job site was using and drop this on a job site, I could see, like you said, a tool company or Ferguson or someone, one of these bigger vendors saying, no, we can do this. This makes financial sense versus, you know, putting someone into your company. I've seen vendor managed inventory where they have somebody who has an office at your company. You know, that's a lot of money,
right?
That's a lot of money. So
that is a lot of money. Well, this was really, really fun to sit down and do. One more is artificial intelligence powers a new era in construction. This is from Forbes. This was more to just say, hey, look, you know, Forbes and others, big groups are really starting to look at the impact of what AI can do. And we haven't really talked about it here because we went out on the dork edge to talk about a few things. But some of the power here that I wanted to hit on was AI can be used in pre-construction phases through the application of historical data analysis. You know, we've always talked about the enterprise data model not existing for construction because our data is so disparate. Our data is so difficult. Yes. Now we've got something that can be trained to parse through it and to really maybe start to generate that enterprise data model, which then can really provide us with a data-informed world, which everybody who listens knows that's my big thing, is data informed, because we're going to make decisions, right? And we're going to change what we care about. So I just thought I'd put this out there, just a quick one. Maybe Jonathan, what's your biggest hit in the entire construction continuum that you think AI is going to have the most valuable impact in the shortest period of time?
Well, I mean, I actually think rather than the LLMs, I think the NLMs, the smaller, more directed learning models, like where we're teaching it just, you know, like we're teaching it to read PDFs specifically. It doesn't do a lot of other things. It doesn't get distracted. You can really be dialed into those things. I think those are going to have that bigger impact in pre-construction. Like saying LLMs are there, that's great. They're very, you know, generalists. We need some technicians. And that other type of learning model, the larger or the smaller learning modules that are, you know, made by labels and everything, those are focused. I think all these little focused learning models are going to be where we win and where we see the biggest bang for our buck early on. I'm building one now and I wish I had more time and energy because it applies to so much in pre-construction. You could use it for just all of these, I hate to say, all of these tedious things that we have to do that we don't want to do anyways. It really does a great job of that and doesn't talk back yet.
Travis, same question to you to finish this out.
Well, I think the Forbes article actually touches on it. I think one of the things that it provides the most valuable value for us now is, you know, I preach since I came into construction as a technologist, collect the data because you never know when you're going to be able to use it. And now we have these tools that, to your point, can take these large pools of unstructured data. You know, they don't even need to structure it, but they kind of structure it themselves and start to provide insights back out of it. And it's, no matter how many data scientists and how much, you know, compute power you throw behind it, you're still not going to be able to process as much data as we've created without using a tool like this. And I think that these tools will help us start to begin to leverage our history a little bit.
I love it. And I think that's where we're going to leave it, guys. So I want to say thanks to the construction dorks, Jonathan and Travis, for joining me today to do the news. I hope this isn't the last time we do it. If you want to check out our other podcasts, check out constructiondorks.com or find us on your favorite podcast app. And with that, thank you for tuning in.